So welcome everyone, and thank you for coming this morning. Is there anybody who is new for the first time? Okay. So this is a Dharma talk, and what we've been talking about for a good deal of time lately are the things in Buddhism that are called the hindrances and the obscurations, and the more lately the factors of awakening, the aspects of the, what are these fundamental aspects of a mind that is awakened, sort of demystifying the process. And that these obscurations, these hindrances, these issues, this stuff, these dramas, these melodramas, these afflictions, all the stuff that we are always dealing with, they are covering up, they are obscuring our capacity to see the true potential that we have as human beings and really what the nature of our mind is. So therefore, as I've been talking about these factors of awakening, I've been saying that our practice needs to be primarily focused on the cultivation of the factors of awakening, and not primarily focus on working through dealing with our stuff. Because those of you who have worked on your stuff for many years or even decades realize there's no end to it. But cultivating the factors of awakening in one's life do put an end to it. And so we want to be able to not to ignore or suppress or wallpaper over our stuff, our issues, our hindrances, but we need to just clearly name them for what they are, understand what is causing them, but also understanding that, again, it's the same way, like I've said before, health means cultivating a healthy body. And when one has a healthy body and a strong immune system and strong organs and stuff like that, naturally that body will be able to ward off, fight, take care of parts of our body that get sick. Right. In the same way, when we cultivate the aspects of a healthy mind and have a healthy mind, which means the factors of awakening are present in our mind, that healthy mind can then quite easily take care of those parts of our mind that are not healthy, as well as we will find that we don't get sick as often. So there are these seven factors of awakening. And what we've been looking at the last several weeks are this fundamental one of mindfulness. And then we looked at investigation. And then we looked, I think last time, at joyful effort or diligence. And we know that unless we, let's say these three out of the seven, are not present, it is very difficult to ever change. Unless we have the capacity to see clearly what's going on within ourselves or around us, unless we are not willing to stop and look more deeply into the causes and conditions that are creating the situation, and if we are not diligent, which means we're not energetic about applying mindfulness and investigation to all the events of our daily life, real change, and the real change is what we are seeking, will not come about. It is really as simple as that. And whether that is a change that we are seeking within ourselves, which means when we are present to our own mind, to our thoughts, to our mind states, to our emotional states, if we find that that experience of being present to our own mind is not one of well-being, is not one of ease, is not one of happiness, is not one of open-heartedness, but the opposite then it is something that we want to look into. In the same way, you know, this is engaged Buddhism. So this is a Buddhism that is engaged in all aspects of life. In the same way, in our relationships with people, when we ones that are close and ones that are not so close. But if we, when we stop, and we are mindful of these relationships, and if we find they are not ones that are happy, ones that are not in harmony, ones that are not examples of compassion and loving kindness and acceptance. Again, we want to stop and look deeply into causes if we want them to be different. Again, the impetus to this stopping and being mindful and looking deeply is also a willingness to step out of our own selves. As long as we are seeing everything and the other through the prism of our own narrow egocentric views, our view will always be distorted. So part of this practice is a willingness to put our own interests aside and to be interested in the views, the ideas, the life experience of the other, whether that's our loving partners or friends or parents or children or people we work with or anything. This willingness to look deeply, to investigate deeply the conditions of life, our own and others, is the path, is the enlightened path. Because in it we are acknowledging the interdependence, the interconnection of life, as opposed to what we traditionally acknowledge is the independence, the total self-absorption of the way most of us look at life. Now today I want to indulge, if you'll indulge me, is take it another step. As you know, right now, our president has announced that we are once again ramping up a war. We are ramping up violence. We are responding to violence with violence. And I think as Americans, we have gotten used to hearing about this, and maybe privately agreeing or disagreeing, but there seems to be very little dialogue. Nobody asks our opinion. It is like a fait accompli. And so I think it's important that we use these tools that have been given us of mindfulness and investigation to look deeply into these situations. And so I want to spend a little time with you just sharing the perspective of the Buddha and other masters. Because the world of violence, and also you know in these past weeks, there's been a lot of news about personal violence, the violence that one human being does to another human being, you know, a husband does to a wife. So they're really all the same. We have to understand that we have to demystify the process of war and violence that goes on national levels and in group levels is really no different than what goes on in our own life. Because these are human beings and their perceptions and their emotions that are driving things. And so if we don't understand what drives anger and resentment and desire for revenge and desire to hurt another human being within ourselves, we'll never understand how it happens at a societal level. The Buddha said, All tremble at violence. All fear death. Putting oneself in the place of another, one should not kill or cause another to kill. All tremble at violence. All feel death. We do not want violence to be perpetrated against us. We do not want violence perpetrated against our loved ones, our friends, our family, people we identify with. Right? And we certainly do not want them killed. This is universal. No matter what your ethnic group is, no matter what your age is, your socioeconomic status, your gender, this is a common trait of all human beings. All human beings and animals tremble before death, tremble before violence. And so the Buddha said, one should not kill nor cause another to kill. And this is really this ahimsa, this nonviolence, is at the core in Buddhism of all Buddhist ethics or morality, or what we just might say, how we act with one another, how we interact with one another. We want to do no harm. We want to do the least harm. We don't want to hurt. Why? Do unto others as you'd have others do unto you. We don't want anybody to do that to us or our loved ones. And when we understand that all human beings have that same, it doesn't mean that people who don't have that, people who kill knowingly and freely, or are willing to give themselves up to their own death or expose themselves to violence, is usually because why? They're either intoxicated, or they've gone through a process of training or indoctrination that allows them to supersede this basic human attitude toward violence and death. So the Buddha said, hatred will not cease by hatred, but by love alone. This is the ancient law. Now this immediately sounds what? Quite airy-fairy, doesn't it? In this day and age. We'd be embarrassed to say this publicly, wouldn't we? That is how distorted modern life has become. And we have to understand that in the Buddha's time, when he promulgated this nonviolence, making war on little principalities, making war on other principalities, was common. He actually came from the warrior caste. India, Hinduism, the Vedic religion was caste, and he came from the warrior caste. Actually, very interesting enough, in Buddhism, the Eightfold Path is considered the wheel of Dharma. And he took that from the war chariot. Right? The wheel was the wheel of war. And he took that wheel and he turned it into a wheel of peace. So, hatred will not cease by hatred, violence will not, but by love alone. This is the ancient law. Now, what does this mean on a very personal level? We all have relationships. People don't do what we want them to do, right? There's a disagreement, there's a conflict, there's a strong disagreement or conflict, or somebody really does something that we think is quite outrageous. What do we do? If we respond to them in anger, either physically or verbally, what does that do? Does that cool the passions, cool the fire, and make the other person responsive to us? No. It does the opposite. We all know that. We all know that because we've done it, and we've seen what happens, and we've also been the recipient of it from others. We know the results of that. But traditionally, our attitude is we want you to change. You're the cause of the problem. I want you to change. We never think what? Maybe I need to change. And maybe by my responding to the situation in a very different way, that might create the basis for long-term change in the relationship. Right? So when somebody is angry at us, we don't have to respond with anger. We can respond with understanding, with love, with acceptance. That changes the dynamic of the relationship. But that's not easy for us, is it? Because the self, the ego, always wants to feel justified and right, and wants to always feel what? That I'm good and you're bad. I'm right and you're wrong. I'm noble and you're ignoble. Right. And we do that, we know, in our most intimate relationships. There are people that we love, there are people that we like, but when we get angry, when we feel hurt, when we feel disappointed, we objectify them as what? As somebody bad, somebody who only has negative qualities. Right? And that allows us to what? To continue down the road of conflict, of anger, of self-justification. It does nothing to alleviate the problem, and it does nothing to take the relationship in a new direction. Now, that is no different. Our experience in intimate relationships, close relationships, family members, friends, is no different than what goes on in the world. The crazy idea that violence and war can create peace is insane. Right? I mean, one only has to look at history. Ancient history through modern times of our own century, and knows, you know, every war is justified by those who perpetrate it. Every war is fought for noble causes, and every war promises what? Peace. And yet any practical, realistic person cannot look at what's going on and going, the more violence there is in the world, the more violence there is in the world. And that's just, that's reality. And those who believe that the more violence, whether it's in a human relationship between two people, a violence response, a revengeful response, a hurtful response, is creating the conditions for a loving relationship, for a harmonious relationship, is crazy. Would you agree with me or disagree? It's Buddhism is based on cause and effect. It's not based on dogma. It's not based on catechism. It's not based on idealized theology. The fundamental principle of Buddhism for understanding how things operate in the world is cause and effect. Right? If you want to grow an apple, you need what? An apple seed. Right? You can't plant a peach seed and get an apple. Is that clear? Cause and effect. How anger and violence can be the cause of harmony and peace, it cannot be. It can only be the seed of more violence, more anger, more resentment. So whether it is in our most personal relationship, and I could even talk about nonviolence as the way we are with ourselves. Many people are violent with themselves. Many people are aggressive with themselves. Many people talk to themselves in the privacy of their own mind in an aggressive way. Many people do violence to their own bodies. So nonviolence is not just a technique in Buddhism. Violence is really a way of living. And it's not passive. It's very active. But it's based on the principles of, if you want to create a loving world, then you become a loving person. If you want to create a peaceful world, then you are a peaceful person. Right? If you want to uproot anger in the world, you uproot it in yourself. If you want to uproot intolerance in the world, you uproot it in yourself. If you want to uproot fanaticism in the world, you make sure that you have freed yourself of it yourself. That is the only way we will create a different world. And so, is what seems so obvious to me, perhaps I am blinded. I don't think that one can help look at what's gone on the last 10 years since 9/11 and seeing that somehow all the violence that we have participated in has solved the problem. Thich Nhat Hanh, during the Vietnam War, when Vietnamese were killing each other, the Vietnamese of different political persuasions were killing each other, he wrote this wonderful poem. He said, "Man is not the enemy. Right? Hatred is the enemy. Intolerance is the enemy. That's the enemy. Man is never the enemy." He said, people are killing, thinking they're killing the enemy, they're killing their brothers. We're killing people who are part of the human family. We know in our own families, we may have errant family members, right? Family members who may do all kinds of things that we may not approve of. And yet because we acknowledge that they are family members, we don't wish for their death. We don't want violence to come for them. And we do our best to understand them and hope that through education, through dialogue, through relationship, we can help them. We all know that. The Dalai Lama said, through violence you may solve the problem, but you sow the seeds for another. I remember many, many years ago when I used to work with people who abused their children. And physically abused their children. And the truth is that hitting your child when they are misbehaving works. To say it doesn't work is a mistake, because whatever the child is doing, whatever the misbehavior is, if you give them a good hit, they usually will stop it, right? So in the short run, it works. But the problem with abusing your children or physically hurting your children is it damages the child, then it damages the relationship. But it does stop that misbehavior at that moment, usually. Is that clear? So the Dalai Lama said, through violence you can solve, people quote unquote, you may solve the immediate problem, but you sow the seeds for another. If we want to stop sowing the seeds for endless violence, then we have to look at how we're responding in the situation. the problem is in this world today that people are not mindful, people are not looking deeply, people are not acknowledging interconnection, interbeing, and we're just solving the immediate problem. Nobody has big picture anymore. Right? It's like us in our lives. If we don't have Dharma, if we don't have some kind of big picture that kind of is showing us how to see the current situation in a more profound way, in a bigger way, if we just go, as many people go, situation to situation, crisis to crisis, day to day, it'll be endless, won't it? Anybody notice that? But when you get the big picture, when you stop and you're mindful and you step back and you try to look what's really going on, you see what's ever arising in you or in the other person in the context of a bigger picture and the context of how you want to be and how you want the relationship to be, then how you respond to that situation is very different than if you're just responding to it in a reactive, emotional way. Is that clear? We know that as individuals, that we need that. That's what Dharma practice, spiritual practice is about. It's getting the big picture in life. It's seeing the forest for the trees. So all of a sudden, all the so-called crisis or difficulties or problems in daily life are seen in a very different way. All one's own stuff is seen in a very different way. If you don't have that different way, and Buddha came into this world to teach a different way. He took the wheel of war and he turned it into a wheel of peace. Most spiritual teachers, masters who've lived in this world are trying to move us in a different way. Martin Luther King, a contemporary. We all have to be concerned about terrorism, but you will never end terrorism by terrorizing others. Man must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, retaliation. Wars are poor chisels for carving out peaceful tomorrows. Nothing good ever comes of violence. We know that, don't we? And then finally, the chain reaction of evil, wars producing more wars, must be broken, or we shall be plunged into the dark abyss of annihilation. Quite strong. In the five Buddhist precepts that were reformulated by Thich Nhat Hanh and his community, into the five mindfulness trainings, let me share with you the one called Reverence for Life. Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life. So these five mindfulness trainings or precepts is one when one sort of formally becomes a Buddhist, but one doesn't have to be a Buddhist to one receives these precepts are transmitted, and one is making the commitment, the vow, to do one's best to practice them. So this is the one called Reverence for Life. Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I am committed to cultivating the insight of interbeing. The insight of interbeing, that everything is connected, that all actions have reactions, that we are all part of one inextricably interconnected web of life where one thing affects everything else and everything else affects the one thing. To even do violence against people 5,000 miles away is creating a mind state right here. It is creating a mind state in those that we are sending to perpetuate the violence in our name. We call that what? PTSD. And it's a perfectly acceptable and treatable kind of thing that we, you know. And we never stop and go, what are the, you know, why are these men and women, these young men and women, so traumatized by what they've done. Because there is something basically inhuman about killing and harming another human being. It cannot not affect us. Is that clear? So the effects are on the one who is doing as well as the one who is done. You know, there's a great classic in Buddhism called The Path of the Bodhisattva. It's the path of the enlightened being, the altruistic being. And he very interestingly says, we have to, and it's hard for us. I mean, I remember when I first read it, I went, what? He said, we have to stop only identifying with the victim and not with the perpetrator. We don't like that one. He said, because they are both suffering. We have to see the big picture. We know what? We know that today's child abuser was often what? An abused child. Right? When they were abused child, we had sympathy for them. Now that they're an abuser, we have no sympathy for them. But if we don't look deeply and see what are the roots of that person who is acting this way, we will never eradicate the problem. Why is our own society becoming more and more violent? Why do people seemingly at the drop of a hat, young even, pick up weapons and kill? Just like that. Why? Because they're what? Because they're angry at somebody? Because they don't like somebody? Why is violence so epidemic in our society? If we don't see the interconnection with all these other factors, we are missing something of significance. Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I am committed to cultivating the insight of interbeing and compassion and learning ways to protect the lives of people, animals, plants, and minerals. It's a very kind of simple decision for each of us. Right. Am I here in this world to protect life? To do the least harm or not? That's very personal. Hopefully over time, those kinds of decisions and thinking couldn't be societal. But whether it's in relationship to those around me, relationship to the earth, to plants, to animals, am I here to protect? Or am I here to participate in doing harm? I mean, that's a very fundamental question, again, which can appear to be somewhat philosophical or big, but it's very small, isn't it? It really has a lot to do with the way we conduct our life and the way we eat and the way we relate to one another and how we use the things of the earth, and right? I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to support any act of killing in the world, in my thinking, or in my way of life. Seeing that harmful actions arise from anger, fear, greed, and intolerance, which in turn come from dualistic and discriminative thinking, we separate ourselves. Whether it's our loved ones that we, just like that, turn into the enemy, right? Does everybody know what I'm talking about? How quickly we do that? Or whether as a society, how quickly we do that? That's dualism. We see others as separate from ourselves. The realization of the Buddha was the oneness, the interconnection, the interbeing of life. Not as a philosophical, religious, spiritual tenet, but as an actual experience. This is what awakening is about. When you understand that we are all connected, that we are all part of one body, then we don't want to do harm to any part of it. And when a part of it is ill, when a part of it is sick, we want to find skillful ways to heal it, don't we? Right? I mean, I don't. If my hand is infected, my response is not to cut it off. We would laugh, right? No, why don't you? There are other things, Fred, you could do. I mean, if you saw me just about to, take the saw to it, I'm saying, oh, this hand is just causing me so much pain, I'm just going to saw it off. I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? You'd say, one, that's crazy, and two, it's crazy because there are lots of other ways to treat that pain short of such a destructive act. But whether it's in the most intimacy of human relationships, where violence is the immediate response to disagreement or conflict or feeling bad, or whether it's societally, right, where that's the first response. It's what do you do after that? Right? This is the problem with violence against children, right? If a parent's first response is violence, well, what happens if the child doesn't listen? I mean, what choice do you have? Ramp up the violence, right? It's the same way in relationships. You know, if she doesn't just respond to a slap, you have to do what? Right? Hit her harder. It's logical, isn't it? It's a twisted logic. But you leave yourself no out. When our response is always immediately to respond with violence, if that doesn't work, the only answer is what? More violence. Right? Those of us old enough to remember the Vietnam War, when it was clear that we were losing the war on the ground, do you remember there were some people whose response was what? Well, we should bomb them back to the Stone Age. I mean, that was a response by some of our leaders. And there's a logic to that, isn't there? Twisted and sick that it is. But there is another way. And in the same way, that we may say the perpetrators of violence are usually people who have had violence perpetrated to them, we know things also change too, right? Countries that were, just speaking of Vietnam, remember it was those of us who remember the Vietnam War, we know what? We were told what? These people are evil. The people who want to take over, they're evil, they're barbarians. No different than today, and we have to exterminate them and not let them take over Vietnam, right? Do you remember? And now, who's a great trading partner of ours? Vietnam. Huh? Who's our closest allies? Germany and Japan. That's World War II. I mean, it's, if we don't stop and turn our mindfulness, turn our investigation, turn this wonderful mind we have that is capable of insight, that is capable of clarity, that is capable of seeing subtlety, we will continue to have this one-dimensional world and it is not a world that we want to raise our children in if we had a choice. Those of us who have children, grandchildren, nieces and nephews, who love young people. Would any of us like to have our children living in Syria or Iraq today? No. Would any of us want our children to be mistakenly killed by a drone strike that was trying to kill somebody? No. There's no way to justify it when we make it personal. I'm determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to support any act of killing in the world in my thinking or my way of life. Again, to Thich Nhat Hanh is reaffirming that nonviolence is a way of life. It's a way of thinking. It's a way of interacting. It's just not a technique. Seeing that harmful actions arise from anger, fear, greed, intolerance, which in turn comes from dualistic and discriminative thinking, I will cultivate openness. This is the response. I will cultivate openness, non-discrimination, and non-attachment to views in order to transform violence, fanaticism, and dogmatism in myself and in the world. And this is really very fundamental to our spiritual tradition, right? That we understand this is what a Buddha is. You know, people, again, we hear these words, Buddha, becoming a Buddha, becoming enlightenment, and we make it like it's some mystical kind of process only for the chosen. That is not the way it has ever been transmitted in the Zen tradition and the other meditative traditions. Everybody has the capacity for being a Buddha. Everybody has the capacity for enlightenment, because all of us have the capacity for cultivating what? Compassion, loving kindness, understanding. I mean, all of us, right? No matter how screwed up we are, right? And many of us are really screwed up, right? It's amazing, no matter how screwed up we are, we probably have known within our own mind and our own actions, there have been moments, haven't there, when we've acted from kindness, right? When we've been patient, right? When we've been understanding, when we've been willing to stop our reactivity and do it differently, right? And we all know that that feels good. So please understand that when you think of somebody like a Buddha, the only difference between them and us is that positive mind states are always present, and all the afflictive mind states are no longer present. Is that clear? So the quotient is different, but the same human qualities are there. I will cultivate openness. The more that we see that the world is becoming more and more intolerant, the more and more that their people are fueled by fanaticism, the more they're fueled by hatred, the more they're fueled by that intolerance and hatred to do violence, our response is to do the opposite. Do the opposite. We know in our own time we have seen major transformations occur in life. Whether it was such a thing like the Civil Rights Revolution or the independence of India or the ending of the Cold War, right? Major cataclysm events in our times, that came about through what? Nonviolence. There was no violence. And yet, a great change occurred. And we know that that for people such as Martin Luther King, while for many, nonviolence was a technique, for him, it was a way of life. It was something that permeated. He was a man of deep religiosity, of deep spirituality. And his, even though he was thrust into the forefront of a social movement, right, he always came from this profoundly spiritual religious place. And he was just a man like us. In another aspect of the precepts in the Order of Interbeing, also founded by Thich Nhat Hanh, he ends the precept there by saying, we will diligently practice deep looking with our Sangha, that's the community of practitioners, to discover better ways to protect life, prevent war, and build peace. So, I mean, I would say this is a part of our challenge as we are involved with this process of our own personal healing and transformation by using the tools of meditation and mindfulness and awareness and all the various other teachings and practices that are available to us from this wonderful stream of 2,600 years of wisdom and working with the human mind and human behavior and speech, that we also understand that we need to take these teachings and bring them into the modern world, bring them into our own community, and be creative. You know, we are starting on Thursday nights, every other Thursday night, to have a forum where we're trying to use Buddhist teachings and look at them in a more contemporary way. We've, the last two Thursdays, we've dealt with sexuality, and I think for those who attended, it's been a very interesting and meaningful time to turn the lens of mindfulness, meditation, and Buddhist thought, and to look at the contemporary issues of it. And I think we need to use these forums also for looking at these whole issues of our society and violence and war, and again, things that, again, interestingly enough, have seemed to be removed from the public dialogue, right? Nobody talks about it, do they? It's really bizarre. Nobody talks about it. And yet it is so essential. It is, I guess, in more personal, interpersonal world, it's called what? Denial. It's called the elephant in the living room that nobody wants to talk about. We want to talk about PTSD and how we treat these veterans who are coming home so physically and mentally wounded, but we don't want to talk about what caused it. There's an elephant in the living room, isn't there? And we are in denial as a society. So good. I just wanted to... I just felt with seeing the news and seeing just the lack of response and the war drums of being beaten again and such harm that we have done with our violence overseas, but also to our own young men and women who are so many coming back so wounded their whole lives. If we don't ask, you know, what is it really for? If we don't, out of gratitude for them, we need to look deeply.